fans, welcome to Railbird Central at Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caravu. Joined this morning by our live blog director, Jamie Snowden. We're talking Packers football, and we're talking about a Green Bay victory, 38-20 over Washington in the Lambeau Field home opener on Sunday. It was a dominating performance from the Packers from pretty much start to finish. Maybe we can argue that maybe the finish wasn't all that well, but I'll tell you what, the game was in check by the time the clock expired. The game was out of hand by then. It was already determined, the outcome. The Packers get off to a hot start and puts the bad taste in people's mouths from last week, puts that away. Reminds us of better times here, right? The Packers getting a victory on Sunday over Washington and dispatching of RG3. And you know what? RG3 isn't nearly the player he was last year. I mean, you kind of maybe gave him the benefit of the doubt in week one, thinking, well, maybe it's just a bad game from him. Well, it's more than just a bad game for RG3. He doesn't have what it takes. I seriously think, and this is not Washington talk show here, but I mean, they should go with Kirk Cousins at quarterback until RG3 looks better, looks healthy, looks like a different player. Because, I mean, he's that whole team. That is not, you know, based upon what I saw yesterday and based upon what I saw in the Monday Night Football game the week before, that is not a very good team. They don't have a whole ton of talent outside of RG3 there. Or at least, I mean, not that they're not a bad team, but I'm not sure that's a team that competes for the playoffs. They got to start surrounding RG3 with some talent. And perhaps maybe on the defensive side of the football more than anywhere. They got Ryan Kerrigan, who looks like a very nice player. And London Fletcher is pretty nice as a linebacker, but even London Fletcher's getting kind of old. You know, time to start surrounding that team with a little bit more talent if they're going to compete with the elite of the elite. I just was, before I came on the show here, talking with Bart Winkler on K107 in Fond du Lac, and we were talking about, you know, after San Francisco got killed, you know, on Sunday Night Football last night by the Seattle Seahawks, how do you feel about the Packers now that San Francisco was beat big time? And you know what? I truly do think that the San Francisco, Seattle, and Green Bay, those all three could be the top teams in the entire NFL. And maybe you can throw the Broncos up there too. They're pretty good. But, you know, I think San Francisco, Seattle, Green Bay, they could be beating up on each other any given week if they were to play each other. You know, if that game's at Lambeau Field, maybe the Packers come out on, you know, victorious over both San Francisco and Seattle. You know, whoever's playing at home has the advantage. Probably didn't help that game last night was delayed by rain as long as it was and kind of shutting the 49ers down a little bit. Although the Seahawks still look good, though, didn't they? But anyway, Packers, I mean... Let's talk about a record-setting performance here yesterday at Lambeau Field. I mean, first of all, I got to give due credit to Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers. And, you know, it seems like every other game you're talking about an amazing performance by Aaron Rodgers. But, I mean, he is what he is. I mean, he's the best quarterback in the NFL right now. In my mind, there's no doubt about it anymore. Peyton Manning maybe used to be. Tom Brady could be if he had some weapons around him. They all left in free agency or injured or whatever. Aaron Rodgers is the man. He's the number one QB in the NFL by far at this very moment. And you saw it on display yesterday. in a game that Aaron Rodgers threw for 480 yards. Actually, tied the record, the single game passing yardage record held by Matt Flynn. The one game Matt Flynn starts his entire Packers career, and he passes all over the place against, who was it? Did he play the Lions? Was it that game? Anyhow, Aaron Rodgers looks absolutely terrific. I thought his ball placement was so impeccable, and that's what makes Rodgers so great. He throws balls where only his receivers can catch them. I mean, he went and got through that one pass in the end zone, that touchdown to JerMichael Finley. He threw that thing up to the second floor, and JerMichael Finley went up and took the elevator to get it. And that JerMichael Finley is the only player on the field coming down with that catch. And then he throws the one that I thought it's a shame that the touchdown to Jordy Nelson, not the one that counted, but the one that was called back, the one that was the Packers had holding, so the touchdown didn't count. David Bakhtiari gets called for holding, but Jordy Nelson goes in and he catches that ball in the corner of the end zone, goes to the ground to get it. That ball was only being caught by Jordy Nelson. Absolutely fantastic. And you know, that isn't a, you know, Jordy Nelson caught two other touchdown passes that were simply fantastic as well. I mean, the guy throwing the ball, Aaron Rodgers, deserves so much credit. And the receivers did their part. I mean, there wasn't a drop yesterday. After seeing in week one, you saw JerMichael Finley drop the football, you know, and it turns into the big turnover that was really disappointing. But, yeah, I mean, Aaron Rodgers did a fantastic job distributing the ball, and the wide receivers, they did a great job catching the ball. They did a good job getting yards after the catch, running down the field, taking a lot of times. You saw Randall Cobb catching short little passes and then turning them into long gains. I mean, wow. It just the skill position talent the Packers have is fantastic. And if I have this correctly here, this was the first game in NFL history, and I retweeted it from, I think NFL AM had it this morning. I think the first game in NFL history a team has had a 450-yard passer and 125-yard rusher, that, you know, between Rodgers and James Starks, who did his damage on the ground. First game in NFL history that ever happened. So, you know, that was something. You know, for the first time that to happen in NFL history, you know you have a good performance. And yeah, I mean, that goes, you know, same thing for Packers franchise history. The first time they've ever had a 400-yard rusher and a 400-yard passer and a 100-yard rusher in franchise history. So, I mean, fantastic, fantastic superlatives here. And, you know, kind of getting to the rushing part of it, I mean, how about James Starks becoming the first player in Packers, first Packers player to rush for 100 yards or more, or rush for at least 100 yards in 45 games since Brandon Jackson did it against who else? The Washington, that team in Washington, in 2010. The Super Bowl season. So, you know, now 3 seasons ago, last time the Packers had a guy rush for at least 100 yards. At the first time they've had a guy hit the century mark. Yeah, it's been a long time, hasn't it? And it really does give you hope that this team could be, you know, on the rise in terms of their rushing attack and having a more balanced attack and, you know, those two aspects of the game taking pressure off one another. It really does. And, you know, of course we can get into the whole, you know, James Starks filling in for Eddie Lacy, who, you know, should have been the guy maybe running for 100 yards. But, you know, that isn't to diminish what James Starks did. You know, James Starks, here's a guy who people thought, you know, could be cut at the end of training camp. And I tweeted this out during the game. I mean, when I made my 53-man roster prediction that we talked about here on Railbird Central, you know, I had the Packers keeping Alex Green ahead of James Starks. That's what I thought they should have done. And you know, I admit, I'm sorry, Mike McCarthy. I'm sorry, Ted Thompson. you proved me wrong. You made the right call in keeping James Starks. And you know, you keeping the big bruising tailback, a guy who was able to fill in for Eddie Lacy. You know, usually it's James Starks, the one with the injury issues, but you know, credit to him. So far through training camp, he's done incredible. So far in the regular season, he hasn't had any injury issues pop up yet. He's looking healthy. He's looking good. He's looking the most explosive I've seen him in a long time. James Starks took a handoff to the edge, to the sideline, and got out there so fast. I've never seen that from James Starks before. You know, he's been a good guy. He's you know, had his moments over the years, but in terms of getting to the edge, that's never been the James Starks I've ever seen. He's the kind of guy who makes his damage on the inside between the tackles, you know, running over a few guys or making a tackler miss, never getting to the edge. And I saw that yesterday once. I'm like, wow, James Starks getting to the edge. He's looking good. I mean, he's at least able to show, even if Eddie Lacy gets, you know, healthy or whatever, he can at least be a nice complimentary back. And who knows how long Eddie Lacy will be out here. Eddie Lacy suffering the concussion, and we can get into that as well here. You know, from courtesy of Washington safety Brandon Merriweather, which it is kind of a joke a little bit that, you know, he seems almost uncognizant of, you know, the trend or the way the NFL's been heading the past few seasons in terms of how much they're trying to get away from, you know, taking the head out of football. It just comes down to Brandon Merriweather has to hit with his head up, not his head down. You know, come on. I mean, you shouldn't be so foolish. I mean, and perhaps he got what was coming to him by knocking himself out of the game later in attempting to tackle James Starks. Puts the head down, helmet-to-helmet collision with James Starks, and Brandon Merriweather himself suffers a concussion. As far as Eddie Lacy goes, now I couldn't tell you how long Eddie Lacy will be out. I mean, it differs greatly from player to player. He has to undergo the NFL's concussion protocol, and it can depend. I mean, he could be back this week against the Bengals this upcoming Sunday, but that's no given. It depends. We'll find out more as the week goes along. There's no way of predicting this. We can't say with any certainty right now on a Monday what's going to happen to Eddie Lacy, as much as we might want to know. It's going to take time. We got to see how he progresses throughout the week. I don't know. I don't know. It's the good thing is I don't think Eddie Lacy has a history of concussions, but I didn't follow his career so closely at Alabama that I could say that with certainty. But, I mean, he certainly hasn't had any, you know, as a member of the Green Bay Packers yet. I think that kind of helps, you know, when you have multiple concussions. I think it takes maybe perhaps a little bit longer to come back. Or you know, they might err on the side of caution a little bit more. And maybe the Packers will err on the side of caution with all their injured players coming up here, seeing as after week three, the Packers have a bye in week four for the earliest bye week in the NFL. Maybe they err on the side of caution with Eddie Lacy. It's kind of looking like maybe Morgan Burnett here. They're kind of looks like he could miss next week as well. You know, already we know that Casey Hayward's probably out till past the bye week or coming back after the bye week, maybe. And, you know, the Packers just want these guys to get fully healthy, and they think, all we got to get by is one more game. Just get through week three here. Then they get the, you know, 2 weeks of rest, you know, including the bye week, the week leading up to it, the week leading after it. you know, prior to the week five game, then getting 2 weeks of rest and getting these guys healthy and then coming back. I think that that's what could happen. I think that's what could happen with the Packers. I see Eric's watching Cheesehead TV on Roku. That is awesome. Folks, if you Cheesehead TV is now on Roku. I mean, we are on television sets throughout the world. You know, Roku, it's certainly not in every home in the world, but it is fantastic that we can actually get people seeing us on television, which is great. Eric, by all means, speak the advantages of a Roku player. What else are we going to talk about here on a Monday morning after the Packers get by the Washington Redskins? I mean, Aaron Rodgers' receivers, all of them, did a great job. I think we saw James Jones get a career-high receiving yards. Here, let me run through the receiving stats. I got the stats from yesterday's game right in front of me. James Jones has 11 catches for 178 yards and should have had a touchdown or could have at least. He fumbled the ball away at right before halftime. It's pretty much about the only little thing that went wrong the entire game for the Packers on offense. And I think that was a career high in receiving yards for James Jones. Randall Cobb has 9 catches for 128 yards and a touchdown. I think that's a career high for Randall Cobb. JerMichael Finley has 6 catches for 65 yards and a touchdown. And Jordy Nelson has 3 catches for 66 yards and 2 touchdowns. They all did fantastic that game. As perhaps you'd like to see more players get involved in receiving the football. And that's something we're not seeing so far. Kind of surprising that we're not seeing Jarrett Boykin really being involved in the offense whatsoever in the early going. I thought especially late in the game he might play a little bit more. But through two games, Jarrett Boykin not getting involved at all. Andrew Corliss has just 1 catch. So, you know, outside of JerMichael Finley, the tight ends are not adding much to the receiving game so far. And James Starks has a few catches out of the backfield, which is nice. But, you know, haven't seen Jonathan Franklin get involved either. And I see that on the live blog talking about Jonathan Franklin. John says, I would have liked to have seen Franklin play. So, especially late in the game when they were up so much, you'd think they'd give him a couple snaps. But anyway, we're nitpicking. Packers dominate and get a good victory regardless of these playtime or, you know, what the fans wish here. It's hard to complain with the outcome of the game, no doubt about it. The offensive line gets off to a little bit of a shaky start in the first quarter. In fact, the first series of the game, they give up 2 sacks to Ryan Kerrigan. Don Barclay kind of looks a little bit shaky in the early going, has a penalty later. But really, the whole offensive line rebounded and really looked good, both in run blocking and pass blocking, no doubt about it. You know, I'd like to make here special mention of the guards, Josh Sitton and TJ Lang. Those two guys, I went and looked at the grades at ProFootballFocus.com. Those two guys had among the worst grades on the Packers team in week 1 against the 49ers, Josh Sitton and TJ Lang, two guys who are getting paid a lot of money, had very poor games in week 1. They rebound and have almost the best games in week 2. Yeah, so I looked it up at Pro Football Focus. The player on the Packers offense with the highest grade on the Packers offense was not Aaron Rodgers on Sunday. Actually, TJ Lang had graded out higher than Aaron Rodgers. Not by much, but by all means here. I think TJ Lang had graded out as plus 4.8 and Aaron Rodgers was plus 4.6. So we're only talking about 0.2 of a point here. But still, the guards bouncing back in a big way. And I just want to make, you know, special notice of this because, Yeah, you know, of course, you know, offensive linemen aren't typically getting a lot of recognition. They don't touch the football, they don't score touchdowns, but they did a very, very good job. So TJ Lang, Justin, keep it up. Just when it looked like people were getting a little bit annoyed by the whole switch from right to left side and they were looking uncomfortable at their new positions, they rebound and have a great game. TJ Lang dominating as a guard, both in pass protection and his run blocking. So that's great. On the defensive side of the football, you know, it almost looked more like the Redskins or that team in Washington, I mean, shooting themselves in the foot, you know, in terms of, you know, Robert Griffin not looking very good. The Washington actually going and getting a running game going, but most of it came late in the game with Alfred Morris rushing for over 100 yards. But the Packers defense getting the job done. It wasn't always pretty. I think again a lot of cases of the Washington shooting themselves in the foot. But still, I mean, Packers defense taking a step in the right direction after getting just annihilated through the air by Colin Kaepernick in week one, to come back and just play solid in week two is a step in the right direction. It means that they're making progress perhaps a little bit. You know, the safeties got exposed so badly in week one. It was good to see just largely MD Jennings and Jerron McMillon be pretty much invisible. You know, that they weren't getting beat in week two. They didn't make any plays per se. MD Jennings and Jerron McMillon didn't really do anything spectacular, even noticeable, but you know what we'll take invisible as a step up from where they were. And hey, speaking of safeties, Chris Banjo goes out and gets his first playing time, first significant playing time, I should say, on defense in a Packers uniform in a regular season game, and he too was largely invisible, but solid, did his job. And hey, I mean, I think for Chris Banjo's pretty much the first extended action he's ever seen in an NFL game. We'll take that. That'll be a positive. So, you know, I don't, it's going to be hard to say when Morgan Burnett gets back healthy. I don't know what the Packers will do at safety, who they'll line up. You know, they kind of used it almost as in the dime packages. Jerron McMillon came up as a slot cornerback. You know, and that's great, actually. Jerron McMillon is so much better as a guy who plays near the line of scrimmage. That's taking advantage of his strengths. But yeah, I mean, and so Banjo then played the deep safety in the dime package for the most part, and he looked good there. Again, just doing his job, not getting beat. So I don't know what the Packers do when they come back. I would, you know, I would guess they'll stick with MD Jennings as the starter. You know, whether that means, you know, who's the odd man out or, you know, Jerron McMillon. I don't know what they do there. I really don't know. It's going to be tough to say, but you know, I suppose that's a good decision, or, you know, good thing to have when you're talking about good players coming back, Morgan Burnett, as in trying to get the poorer players off the field. So anyway, the Packers try to dial up a pass rush. They blitzed, especially on third downs, they blitzed Robert Griffin quite a bit. They didn't get home a lot of times, but I think they did put pressure on Griffin to make quick decisions and throw the ball out before maybe he was ready a few times. You just wish the blitz would have gotten home a little bit more. The Packers only have one sack in the entire day. Comes courtesy of Devon House. And here's another shout out to Devon House. I gave him a red chip for his performance this past Sunday here. I thought it was Devon House's best game of his career. He kind of played on a rotational basis, but when you see what he did on offense blitzing, you saw what he did in pass coverage, and you saw what he did on special teams, I think Devon House is worthy of a shutout for, you know, pretty much he's now in his third year in the NFL, and this was the best game of his career. That's saying a little bit, saying he hasn't played much, coming in. But it's finally starting to click a little bit for Devon House, which is good. He's still got a long way to go, but it's starting to click. And it's also, Packers got a lot of depth at cornerback, which is really good. A lot of depth there, and that's something to really. We'll see going forward how that all shakes out as well. I mean, because even though the players weren't necessarily doing poorly, they took Sam Shields out of the game on a rotational basis to get Devon House some playing time, Micah Hyde as well, and they're just trying to figure things out there. So. I don't really know what's going to happen. John says, I think House moves ahead of Hyde. See, the thing is, though, is they don't play the same positions. Devon House is strictly playing as a perimeter cornerback. He didn't play the slot where Hyde plays the slot. And they actually moved Tremont Williams to the slot at times this past Sunday, which is kind of new for him. Tremont Williams hasn't played the slot a whole lot in Green Bay, but he did a little bit this past Sunday. It's a lot of ins and outs in the secondary, a lot of depth, a lot of guys fighting for playing time. When Casey Hayward comes back, when Morgan Burnett comes back, it's going to be a brawl for playing time out there. I have no clue what they will do. Another shout out to Mike Daniels. He graded out as the Packers' highest defensive player this past Sunday. I thought he did a good job both in rushing the passer and in his run defense. He's really turning into a very nice player, Mike Daniels is. He's the kind of guy who the Packers can, they can play him both in their base defense if they need to. A lot of times they don't because they have Raji, they have Pickett, they have Jolly, they go with the big bodies. But if they have to, they can have Mike Daniels in there, or even if they have him in on the nickel or dime package when they only have two defensive linemen out there, they're not afraid, if all of a sudden a team runs on the team's nickel package, Mike Daniels is still capable of getting the job done, even though he's only like 6 feet tall. John, I see on the live blog here, John Sedlak says, did Dayton Jones play much? Dayton Jones played about what? I think I saw 18 snaps, so no, he didn't play much. I think people are a little bit annoyed that, Dayton Jones is not making much of an impact for a first-round draft choice. But I'll tell you what, there almost isn't a player on the team who needs to buy more than Dayton Jones. I think that ankle injury really set him back, and he's just healthy enough to play, but he's not really right. You know what I mean? I think Dayton Jones really needs that bye week. Heck, I wouldn't be mad if they gave Dayton Jones the week off against the Bengals next week. I mean, if he's healthy and fine, maybe they need him out there, but why not give him the extra week to seemingly get that ankle right? And I think after the bye week, he could be a whole lot better. If he just goes and gets healthy and gets some treatment, I think he can start to make a difference in the Packers pass rush eventually, but he needs to rest that ankle, I think. It just hasn't been the same ever since he hurt it there in the preseason. That first preseason game, first snap of the preseason for him, he goes and injures it, which is, disappointing enough in its own right. And then since then, he's kind of played, but just, hasn't really done anything. I think he could be a really big impact player for the Packers, but needs to get right. So, Morgan Burnett needs the time off. Casey Hayward needs the time off, but so does Dayton Jones too. That is a little bit of surprise that CJ Wilson was a healthy, inactive scratch for the Packers on Sunday. a guy who's you know played a lot of snaps for the Packers over these past 4 years, was a starter on their Super Bowl team, you know, is a guy who's one of the best run stuffers on the entire team. He was a healthy scratch. You know, what the heck? Let C.J. Wilson play next week and, you know, put Dayton Jones down for a week and let him get right. So, but anyway, it's now past 9 o'clock on a Monday morning here at Railbird Central. Thank you so much, folks, for joining us here on the show as we kind of look back at a Packers victory on Monday. We'll be back again on Wednesday. We have shows every Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 8:30 a.m. Central Time. Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com will be our guest. We'll take a look back at the game, at the Washington game with him. We'll take a look ahead to the Bengals game with him as well. So looking forward to that. So join us then. On behalf of Jamie Snowden, I'm Brian Caribou. We'll see you later, everyone. I leave you with a song called Can't Wait Another Day by the String Cheese Incident on Psy Fidelity Records. See you later, everyone. Go, Pack, go.
Every night I pace the hall, just waiting for your call, anticipating your next move, it's got me bouncing off the wall.